Welcome to our after-hours segment, Conversations with the Producer, where myself, Adana Moriarty, the producer of Talking Book Publishing, continues the conversation with our guests, hitting them up for more juicy intel into the world of publishing. I hope you enjoy. Hello.
Hi.
Okay, so my first question, because you said something with Kathleen that I think that a lot of people won't know what that is, which is your style of writing, which is pantser. Could you just kind of define that before we get into the rest of my questions so people have an idea of what that actually looks like?
Sure. Pantser basically means you write by the seat of your pants, and it's kind of the opposite of someone who is a plotter. Some people are outliners and they outline everything in great detail, and some people just take off and fly by the seat of their pants. And I think most writers actually are somewhere in the middle. You know, they have a vague outline or a, you know, light outline, and they, so to me, it's a scale. Pantser over here, plotter over here on the other side.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of my style of writing. So I thought it was a thing that you said in the very beginning of your segment with Kathleen. And I was like, oh, we need to talk about that a little bit. So because you're kind of a seat of your pants writer, I mean, can you talk a little bit about that process? I mean, like, yesterday, somebody asked a question on Instagram in their stories, you know, what is your creative process? And my answer was chaos and inopportune moments. So I'm just kind of curious of like what that looks like for you.
Yeah. I'm going to say, actually, it looks a little different with every project. But for the new book is the most, seat of the pants book I've written ever. And I've completely outlined a novel before, totally detailed outline, like a 40-page outline of the whole thing. And then I've done things kind of in between. I'm kind of agnostic about the process. I don't think there's any one right way, but for me, if I had to try to sum it up was I had a vibe or a feeling. That's kind of my touchstone for what the book is going to be about. The kind of the vibe I got for Road Rash was, well, it's two things. One is, what does it feel like to get kicked to the curb? Get kicked out of something or get fired or get, you're a kid and you have a circle of friends, and you get kicked out of your circle of friends. Just that kind of feeling. It's a terrible feeling, but it's also pretty universal. We've all been through something like that. And the second kind of vibe I wanted to portray was, what does it feel like to drive a band from sitting behind a drum set? So you get these, the kind of vague, I guess you'd say, kind of feelings. And then I get a character, like who can portray this? And none of this is really left brain. It's all kind of fuzzy right brain, touchy-feely stuff, right? And I think about it. I think about it. I'm a runner, and I think about it when I run or when I'm driving the car or washing the dishes or mowing the lawn or something else. I just kind of think about the story and kind of play it in my head like a movie. And then if a scene is kind of clunky, I play it again, think about it, and sooner or later, you go, aha, I like this scene. It actually kind of works. And then you kind of think about it enough to where it sticks in your brain. And then when I sit down to write, I kind of know what I'm going to write. I have a hard time sitting down and not having a clue where I'm going. I need to have a vague idea. Where am I going in this chapter? Or at least where am I going with this opening scene? And a lot of times, if you're stuck, to me, what works for me is not to try to think of the entire book or even the whole chapter, but just think of, what is the one short scene I'm going to write? I'm going to write the scene where this guy goes to work and he gets fired. because he did something goofy, or somebody else did something goofy and he got blamed for it, or whatever. And that's all I have in my head. So I write that scene, and nine times out of 10, when I write that scene, as I'm writing it, I kind of get inspired about the next scene and the next scene and the next scene. And then I kind of go till I'm out of gas.
So in those moments when you're thinking about it, I mean, do you write any of that stuff down? I mean, you said you've completely plotted a book. And I mean, for me, I feel like when you completely plot from beginning to end, it almost thwarts your creativity because you're like, I have this all done. So there's not a lot of room, unless you're like, I'm not going to stick to this. I'm over it. But like, if you're like, I'm going to stick to my outline, like, I mean, to me, I feel like that would, you know, that would just suck the creativity right out of me. So, you know, in those moments when you're like kind of plotting in your head, do you write any of that down, or you just like have a moment, you're running, you get back from running, you sit down and write?
Both, but I do write stuff down. If I'm sitting there thinking, I make notes. I have some here, but we're not, you know, I can show you, but I will just kind of scrawl notes. It's kind of weird. It's like the more informal that they are, I just grab a piece of paper and scrawl, Fred gets fired at work because his boss is a jerk, and then draw a line. And then the next scene, Fred has to call his girlfriend and tell her he gets fired. You know, do they have a fight or not, or whatever? Or does she, you know, is she supportive? I don't know. And then maybe just a few ideas. So yes, I will, if I get an idea, I sometimes will write it down and make notes, so I kind of have a clue where I'm going. So in a sense, it's kind of like outlining as you go. And then sometimes it's kind of an organic process. And, but I don't, I'm deathly afraid of writing 100 pages and then having to throw it away. I live in fear of that. So I don't really, I have a hard time sitting down and writing unless I think, yeah, this really belongs in the story. So I do, again, I'll think about it. The best place in the world is the shower. Think about it in the shower. And a lot of times if I'm kind of stuck, I'm taking a shower and I, you know, after a run maybe, and I think about, you know, what's going on with my story. And then sooner or later you get that kind of aha thing. So to me, just the big picture thing is my belief is that your subconscious does a lot of the heavy lifting here. Right. And I think the way you get, this is just my own personal, this is what works for me. Everybody's different. But for me, if I do something that takes a little bit of brain power, like driving somewhere or washing the dishes or going for a run, just enough to keep me from falling on my face or driving into a tree, it distracts my conscious brain just enough that my subconscious can kind of come out and play. And so I can't just sit down at the keyboard and go, what do I think I want to have happen? It's like, no, I need to get up and do something. Go for a walk, go for a run, whatever, wash the car, something, and think about it. And for some reason, that seems to work. And it's like thinking about your story before you go to sleep. That sometimes can be helpful, because sometimes you wake up and your subconscious has been kind of grinding away while you're sleeping.
So those are my inopportune moments, the shower, doing dishes, driving, when you're like, I can't write this down right now. I have to hold on to it. And I mean, I'm a poet too. And so a lot of times, like, I will come up with lines of poetry when I'm in the shower. And then by the time, you know, I'm done with my whole routine, I'm like, oh man, I have no idea. You know, I try to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it, and then it's gone. Chaos and inopportune moments. I think it's the same thing. You just didn't describe it like that.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, though. Inopportune moments. Yeah.
So, I mean, you write YA, you know, you and Kathleen talked a little bit about that, but I think, like, my question for YA is, do you feel like, you know, as an adult, that writing YA gives you an opportunity to, like, you know, give wisdom back to that younger, like the younger generation as they're coming forward? Do you look at it like that, or is it, it's just you're 17 in your head?
Well, maybe a little of both, but the one thing I kind of don't want to do is tell the readers kind of what to think or what to do. Or I think it's good to write something that makes people think, as opposed to telling them what to think. So maybe what I want to do is I want to put some ideas out there, just kind of for their consideration, without really telling them what's right, what's wrong. My overall take on writing for teenagers is that you have to meet them where they are. So what I don't want to do is kind of preach or kind of try to drop a truth bomb on their head or any of that kind of stuff, because that didn't work for me when I was 17. It still doesn't work for me now. I don't kind of like to be told what to do. And I just try to kind of authentically replicate either what it feels like to be a teenager or what it felt like to be a teenager back when I was a teenager.
Right.
And my characters sure aren't perfect. They're fairly imperfect, in fact. And so, yeah.
Well,
I don't know if I answered the question or not, but.
Well, I asked that because, I mean, you know, your first book, you know, deals with a pretty common teenage issue, which is rejection, ultimately.
Yeah.
And your new book, it does deal with a pretty heavy matter, which is, you know, finding your way, you know, finding your way through a tragedy in your life, grief. I mean, that doesn't always have to be somebody passing away. I mean, there's so many places where, you know, we grieve. It can be friendships breaking up, whatever. I love what you said to Kathleen about putting your grief to work, and I love that because for me, my dad died in the summer of 2020, and out of that came my first book. You know, it was sort of this bittersweet thing of, he didn't get to see it, but it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't have had to figure out how to deal with losing him. So that was kind of where my question came from, was it's, and I feel like YA does that often. I mean, it kind of as a genre, it can deal with heavy stuff, but it makes it entertaining. YA is one of my favorite genres to read because they're not generally 600 pages and you can read a YA book in a weekend. So my last question for you is, in the process of getting picked up by a pretty big house, what did that process look like for you? Because that random house tag on there is what a lot of people want to have happen in their life. So querying and all that, like, what did that process look like?
So first thing I can say is that my process, I kind of went through this twice, actually, because both these books are at different imprints of the same house, but different imprints with different editors. But my process is not typical. I don't know if there is a typical process. Everyone's is different. But for me, the current book, 909 Project, that was my agent was taking it around, and we were kind of bouncing back and forth ideas about editors that might be a good fit for it. And I had read a book. This is one of my pieces of advice, is kind of read in your field, read pretty broadly and deeply in your field and outside your field, and pay attention. I mean, just from a business standpoint, pay attention to the industry. Publishers Weekly has two newsletters that come out every week. There's Children's Bookshelf, and then there's the PW Bookshelf. And they have this thing called the Rights Report, where they talk about all the deals that were made that week, and they'll list the editor who, this editor at this house, bought this book from this author, and it was represented by this agent at this agency. It's, and in a little two sentences about the book, and it's all right there. It's that stuff's like gold, because. Mm-hmm. Because if you read those every week, you know, you can kind of build up a little mental database of who's looking for what. Anyways, but I had read a book, 5 years or more ago that I liked. And so I put a little post-it on it saying, you know, the editor was so-and-so. And then when it came time to shop this book around, my agent was shopping it around. And I said, what about her? This woman who had edited this book that I thought had a similar kind of vibe. The plot's different, but the vibe is the same. Kind of the overall feeling was the same. And so she took it to that editor. But in the meantime, that editor had gone on to become the publisher of that imprint, Beverly Horowitz. But she still edits occasionally. And I was fortunate enough that she liked it and she acquired it. And there was a little back and forth thing, which is, I think, is good. To me, the big difference between publishing and the film industry is that in the movie industry, it's yes until it's no. They always say yes, 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 yes. We're doing this. We're doing that. We're shopping this. We're shopping that. We got an option. Yay, yay, yay. And then sooner or later, they'll finally say no, because if you write 1,000 books, maybe 100 of them get optioned and, you know, 10 of those get a script and only one of those actually do they start primary photography, which is when you get paid. In publishing, it's no until it's yes. They say, do you want this? Well, man, it's not really right for me. Okay. In other words, they don't string you along at all. It's no. And then finally, when they say yes, it's yes. And that's it. And this case was a little different. It was the editor had told my agent that she was really liking this and she was interested, but she had some questions. And my agent wasn't even sure whether or not she should let me know that someone out there was liking it, because, you know, the writing life is nothing but rejection for the most part. And, and it's like, well, I don't want to get Mark's hopes up. And then, but she did tell me, and I said, you made the right choice, because even if this doesn't go through, just knowing that an editor, a real, you know, well-known rock star editor at a big publisher, knowing that they enjoy my work, that right there is a win for me. Even if it doesn't go anywhere at all, like that, I can live for 6 months off just that, you know, that little crumb, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she had questions before we did the deal. She said, what do you think, how would you address this or this or this? And I wrote back a pretty lengthy email, a couple thousand words of how I would address her questions or what I thought. And I think she was really checking to make sure that I was willing to roll up my sleeves and do the work, because I've heard this more than once, but kind of the number one thing an editor wants in a writer, besides a good story, but they get good stories in their inbox every day, but they want a willingness to revise.
Right.
And be open to their editors. They have a really good perspective, and I can't imagine having an editor and not wanting to listen to them, because all they do is help you. That's all, their whole job is to make your book better. So it was a little bit strange process, because there was some backing and forthing for not that long, but then after that, the deal went through pretty quickly. I mean, just in a matter of weeks.
Revision is so important. It is actually something I was not great at, because, you know, as a writer, and we talked about it, and you and Kathleen talked about it, you get attached to the words that you put on the page, because it's time, it's effort, it's creativity. You love that scene, or you love, you know, the conversation or whatever you put down. And sometimes it's hard to go back and say, you know, this really does better the story if I just get rid of it. And I do the same thing that you do. Like if I have to cut a scene, I have an entire, I actually have it in Google Docs, not stored on my computer. I have an entire Google Docs of cut paragraphs, cut scenes, like whatever. Because it's hard to just reject yourself and say, man, this is crap. I can't, you know, what if I can use it? What if I take this short story and turn it into a novel and I can use all this boring description I just wrote, you know, somewhere else, like whatever. It's hard. And that's what editors do for you. So if anybody ever wonders why you need an editor, it's more than just fixing your commas. It really, you know, a good editor really can make your story the best story it can be, because they're critical of it and they're not in love with the words that you wrote.
Absolutely. I agree with everything you said. Yeah. Editors, that whole spelling, punctuation, grammar thing, that's not editing. That's copy editing. Editors do story development. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for hanging out with me for a little extra time. I look forward to meeting you in November. It's always kind of fun to, you know, get to meet all of our speakers and our attendees. And we're really looking forward to this year's 805 Writers Conference. So thanks for coming to that as well.
Oh, thank you. This has been fun. And I'm super looking forward to the 805 Writers Conference. Absolutely.
All right. Well, you have a good rest of your day.
You too.
Talking
Thank you.
Publishing Bye. And our after-hours segment, Conversations with the Producer, are brought to you by writersandpublishersnetwork.com and WPNwebinars.com. We hope you are enjoying our podcast. Reach out to us if there's anything that you would like us to cover on future podcast episodes.